Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Sheila.
And it's the weekend, everybody. Time to reflect on what a horrible week we all had.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what
can you say, right? I mean, we got to be hopeful last week, and then all the hopefulness kind of got drained out of the world
very
by this
quickly.
Week's events. Oh my God, what a nasty
Well,
week.
It's not just what it. Yeah, it was. Well, of course, it was the RNC convention, which was I couldn't. You know, its own hell.
Oh yeah.
And then, but there's just all sorts of just
kind
all
of
sorts
thing
of things
which
going
the term,
on.
I can't even just you know exist.
Yeah.
It was a terrible convention. I mean, you had just a bunch of, and this is the thing that fascinates me about this whole Trump nonsense, right? And you can tell me if I'm being too harsh. I probably won't be. If anything, I'm probably going to be not harsh enough. But the thing that fascinates me about this whole Trump stuff is, and this is me probably to putting too nice of a strain on things, is it really is a boon for people who study the dynamics of cults, right? There's never been in recent history, so, you know, virulently public a cult for everyone to look at. And, I mean, you can go into how do we describe a cult and how do we define a cult. But the kind of, there exists not only no morality, but no reality beyond what Dear Leader says is one of the cornerstones of a cult, right? And say what you will about how much, you know, people reify, I don't know, Bernie Sanders, right? How much people love Bernie Sanders, how much some people love Hillary Clinton. No one on those sides would accept Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton saying up is down and black is white, right? No one would, because those people live in, you know, the reality-based community. If they have a difference of opinion with Republicans, right, it is based on what policies they think will accomplish goals. But the Republicans are now a post-policy party. Like, they don't have ideas anymore. They don't have plans anymore. They don't have goals anymore. They're not for anything except for blindly supporting Trump and whatever he wants to do. And there's no better sign of the fact that then they publicly said, we're not going to have a party platform anymore. You know? Like, and it's
well, they're not really a Republican Party anymore.
Well, no.
In the sense of
Republican Party
being,
is dead. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that whatever the Republican Party exists, it's sort of like,
it's not similar to what happened to the conservatives in Canada.
Yeah.
Where they were wiped out in election and then the crazy right-wing Alberta people took over the party.
Yeah.
Right? And then now the conservatives are just, you know, a party of kind of right-wing nuts.
Well, all I can say is, I mean, outside of being depressed by what's going on in the States, you can still say it's not your country.
I know.
In our country, of course, Aaron O'Toole won.
I know, the conservative
He's our
leadership.
Crazy week one guy.
Yeah.
And don't even want to go there because you guys in the States, which still has our most biggest block of viewers.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to do a shout out to our German listeners and our Great British and our Australian listeners and our Great Britain listeners, you know, that
we absolutely appreciate
biggest
it.
Block and Canada, yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
But you look at Canada and you just go, he got smart when because he ran for the leadership last time.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, said more what he thought and therefore, lost.
Was rejected. Yeah.
Was rejected. This time he has softened his stance and basically mm-hmm. lied, I suspect, about a lot of things. And
I love
won.
That you have to say suspect. We know he's a super crazy right wing nut. Unless he has completely changed all of his beliefs in the past 4 years, he was lying when he said that he's reasonable now.
So then I got an email People have to understand that I do get emails from different groups, like, you know, the support emails.
Yeah, of course. And, asking you to donate
except
to liberals
for the,
or the
conservatives. I get phone messages from conservatives that I just go, are you out of your mind?
How shall I put this delicately? Conservatives assume that their general support base is so old, they don't understand how email works.
So well, I think, you in your house. Well, it's not just that. I think that there's a demographic too, right?
Oh,
but
yeah.
it's the same as the demographic. They just somehow or another assume that when people get older, they get more conservative.
They do, yeah.
Generally speaking. But of course, that is the assumption. And not all of us.
No. And the thing is,
not all of us get more conservative.
Well, I mean, what they really mean is they assume when people get older, they'll become more frightened. Because
I guess that's
No, I mean, how do I put this? I was explaining this to somebody this week over Twitter that the whole project of conservatism is farming fear. Like, yeah. That's what conservative politicians do. They're essentially fear farmers. They go out there and they try to create as much fear as possible. And then they profit off that fear because people vote for them and say, if you vote for us, you don't have to be scared of the, again, socialists, black people, MS-13, blah, blah, blah. Like, they just make up a bunch of things to be scared about, and then they profit off of having made people scared. Yeah. That's the conservative project, at least here in North. I mean, I was going to say just here in North America, but no, it's the same the world over. Like, that's just what they do. All of them follow the same fascist playbook, which is make up an enemy, say that the enemy is coming to kill you and eat your children, and we're the only people who can protect you from that enemy. And then they take all the power and they just loot the country to make themselves rich and powerful. Like, that's, that is the conservative playbook everywhere conservatives.
Yeah. Well, it's also, of course, it's also the playbook, though. And this is the thing, right? Like, I listen to it constantly. I mean, AVG does it too, right? Sends out and, you know, and is constantly telling me that I've got these cookies that are tracking me.
Yeah.
And I cannot shut the damn notification off.
I know.
And it drives me crazy because the cookies that are tracking me are ones that I have allowed to track me.
I know.
And can you not pick this up, AVG? Of course you can. But you want me to subscribe to your messy protection system, which means it's almost impossible to do anything on your computer.
Yep.
Anyway, I mean, when you go into this kind of crazy, I mean, I know some people want to do this. And then I got a phone call and I actually picked up my landline. It was a mistake, I know. But, you know, that every now and then I get something that's coming in on that line.
And it's a number that's kind of like a number you recognize and blah, 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 blah. Well, I know.
It's not even that. It's just, never mind. I picked it up and it was InfoProtect who wants to sell me info protection.
I know.
Right? Against identity theft. And it's Rogers Bank, right? It's part of the Rogers Bank system.
Right.
You know, and it was just, and I'm laughing. I couldn't help but laugh, you know.
Fun fact, here in Canada, I mean, we always talk about America being a dystopia. Here in Canada, our grocery stores and phone companies have banks. Mm-hmm. It's very strange. Banks and insurance companies through your grocery stores and phone companies. It's a weird thing Canada does. I'm sure other countries do it too, but you don't really hear about it in America as much.
No, and they don't have, but they have banks that are online banks. So it's like, it's like the Dutch one. Oh, what the hell is it called? The orange one.
Yep. Do they not just call themselves Orange or whatever? Or whatever they call themselves.
That. Whatever they call themselves.
The Bank of the Netherlands Online.
Online. Yeah. There's some, you know, the Dutch guy that keeps.
Yeah. The Dutch guy from the commercials. Yeah. If you're not in Canada, you don't know what we're talking about. And we apologize.
Yeah, but
there's
anyway.
A guy with this very prominent Dutch
accent.
Dutch accent who like tangerine.
Tangerine. See, we knew
tangerine.
It was orange. That's
I wanted
it.
To say it was an orange company. No, it's a tangerine. They call it tangerine. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, it's basically just a bank that exists only online. So it's like they don't have to have any locations. They don't have to have any staff. It's just, you know, people coding and a server. And they can, of course, offer much better bank rates because they have no infrastructure at all. But at the same point, there's no one you can go to talk to because they don't have any locations.
Yeah. And the thing is that they are, I mean, however, our banking system is highly regulated. Even online banking.
It's not like the Wild West like in America. No, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, you don't have these.
Just to be clear, I'm not scared. I don't use tangerine, but I would not be frightened to use tangerine.
No, one of my tenants used tangerine.
And it works fine, right?
Well, I guess it did. I mean,
but you got the money is my point. You never had any trouble getting money for it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. No, I mean, it's a weird system, but yes, it's also solid, but it comes down to, like, the statement is basically someone told marketing people that fear is the greatest motivator. Yeah. So that's what all of marketing wants to do. And the problem becomes when a country is, you know, kind of just on the cusp of doing better and, you know, having better things happen. Well, one of the two political parties still only gets adherence and only gets people to join it by trying to terrify everybody. Yeah. So you have live in a fake world.
Yes. And then the problem is, okay, and we didn't talk about it last week. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in Canada, they did something like, it's called proroguing.
Yeah.
Okay. Which just closed down the government for 6 weeks.
Yes.
In this case, it's for 6 weeks. Because there's all of this stuff going on, they're switching our system. The system that gives us $2,000 a month is even, you know, as I said, EI, I'm making more money on EI than I would have if I was on real EI. But they're changing the EI system. But I'm in an EI, which is called employment insurance because my summer work evaporated, mm-hmm. so I claimed
employment.
I applied for
in America. They call it unemployment insurance. Yeah. Here we call it employment insurance because we think that's more honest.
So what happens is, right? Yeah, and we pay into it. Blah blah.
Of course,
blah, blah,
it's
blah.
The exact same as the system in America.
Yeah. So what happens is, and ours, but ours is well because we've only got 37 million people or something.
Yes, it's much more generous. And
not, you know, how many people of those work. But the problem is that they have expanded it and they to include people who are contract workers,
right.
who were never, unless they paid into EI, like it's a very, or not contract workers, self-employed.
Yes.
Like I work contracts, but I work for an employer.
And the employer does EI contributions.
I'm not considered self-employed.
No.
So
no, you're a contractor and that's a slightly different thing.
Yes, and I contract teach both places that I teach. I contract teach.
Right, that makes sense.
You know, and in fact, so what happens, right, is that they've had this massive influx, plus a lot of people like me who wouldn't have gotten employment insurance if I'd been teaching this summer.
Yes.
So there's a whole bunch more people who've applied for employment insurance. And so at the end of August, they were going to switch it over to the employment insurance system. Mm-hmm. And I was going, how the hell do they think they're going to do that?
Yeah.
You know, even if they've been working on it, it's still so complicated because I worked, for example, 3 weeks ago, I worked.
Right.
So I claim the hours I worked. I claim the money I made, even though I didn't see it for a while. But you still do it. When you work, you have to claim how much money you made. So in a normal employment insurance, what would happen is they would take the money I made off of what they would normally pay me that week in employment insurance. And I would get nothing for that week, nothing for that week. And I would get money for the week after, but that's all. So I would get half of the amount. Under the COVID thing, it didn't matter. I got the full amount.
Yeah, it's great.
Right? Well, yes, it's great. But there's got to be a reckoning someplace because it's happening again. Next week I will work 3 days, 15 hours. So I'm going to put in 15 hours next week, right? So it's like this weird thing. And to think that they were just going to be able to switch it over – I was going, there's absolutely no way, because they've also got all of these contract
people
to boot who are collecting it, you know, and I'm sitting here going, really, you really think this is going to work? So anyway, and then they've got the Wii scandal that we've already talked about to death about, and they've got a bunch of other things. And of course, we have a minority government. So what they did was prorogue it, because the NDP, who is basically supports the government or has been supporting the government, is, you know, has got, wants certain things in the next budget.
Yeah.
And if they don't get it, they're threatening to
force an election.
Force an election. And so I got an email. This all started because I got an email from the NDP going, you've been hearing rumors about an election. And then it was going blah, blah, blah. And I'm just going, are you crazy?
We're in the middle of a plague. We cannot have an election right now.
We can't have an election right now. Bring them down next April.
Yeah. You know? We can get, once we've got a vaccine, once we're all back at work, once all of this is calmed down, let's absolutely talk about an election then. I am not saying, oh, we can never have another election, blah, 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 so-and-so for life. I'm not crazy.
Well, no, because we're not due another election anyway for a couple of years. So this would be an early election if there was an election called, because when the government fails to pass its budget.
Or really any major legislation. Yes.
No. Other legislation will not cause the fall of the government unless they choose. But if you fail to pass your budget, then the government automatically falls in Canada.
Yeah, that's true. But
that's the only,
Well, no, but there's also votes of non-confidence. Automatic. Exactly. There's also votes of non-confidence. The point is.
Yeah, but that's another.
I'm saying
issue.
That within the Canadian system, there are any number of ways to force an election. Mm-hmm. And one of them is not letting the budget pass. So I don't want people to go away with the impression that the only way to force an election is to not pass the budget. That's not true. There are any number of ways to force an election, especially when there's a minority government.
Yeah. When there's a minority government.
Yeah. When there's a minority government, but not getting it. Yeah. But not passing a budget, it happens automatically because the government needs a budget legally.
And if it's a different, other legislations, can force then a non-confidence motion after it's failed.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's a two-step process as opposed to the automatic process.
Exactly.
So anyway, and we've got a minority, and I can see what the liberals are calculating too, and I'm going, don't do it. They're calculating we're in the middle of a pandemic,
and people are going to want to support them, and people.
They might be able to pull through because of course the conservatives. And this is the dirty pool part of it. Yeah. The conservatives have just gotten their, or whatever they call themselves, have just gotten themselves a new leader.
Yeah.
And consequently, right, you're just sort of sitting there going, yeah, of course, that means they are, to some extent, this guy, nobody knows who he is.
And they think they can, because people haven't found out what a horrible scumbag he is. They've got in their head his being a cipher will let them defeat Justin Trudeau, who of course people have a complicated relationship with.
It's a different thing. I think it's the liberals are sort of calculating that because nobody knows him, and that therefore they've got this new leader. They can, if they call an election, people will vote liberal. You know,
and the conservatives think they have the benefit going the other way.
Yeah, but the conservatives don't really play in this. What's going on right now? The conservatives really have no,
they have no stake in it. It's just between the NDP. Yeah,
basically,
the NDP are going to universally vote against whatever Trudeau does all the time. This is really a game being played between the NDP and the Liberals.
Yeah.
Which is why I say sometimes why it's more like satisfying to look at American politics, because Canadian politics are so much more complicated.
Yeah.
You look by comparison to American politics where it literally couldn't be any more complicated. On one side is a literal Nazi, like a literal white supremacist fascist is running the government, and he wants to run the government. He wants to do away with democracy and run the government forever until he dies, and at which point his son will take over. Like, he wants to turn America into a hereditary dictatorship run by his family. That is his goal. And if you're voting for that, you're voting against democracy and America. Like, there's no middle ground here. There's no, oh, well, I just wish the Democrats were a little better on thing X, Y, or Z. Yeah, that's a fight you can have once Donald Trump's in jail. Like, this is a party. I was talking about the politics of fear, right? And this is the party that went out and asked to speak at their convention people whose only claim to fame is that they pointed guns at nonviolent protesters. That's literally this couple's only claim to fame. And they got to speak at the RNC because they threatened black people with guns. That's literally all they did. They threatened black people with guns, and they got on the RNC stage.
And they're so nice and white.
Well, yes, of course.
They don't... Blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and white.
Exactly. Oh, no, hey, they're exactly the kind of white people that the Republicans like. White people willing to pull guns on completely innocent, just completely innocent protesters. And what I loved was... what I loved was that part of the speech, right? Because they gave this little speech, and I watched their terrible speech, and the speech was, in Joe Biden's America, you know, this could be happening, your house could be next. And I'm like, so you're saying the horrible nightmare of Joe Biden's America is a bunch of black people walked by your house. And that is the nightmare scenario you have to avoid.
Yeah, I know. And you just sort of sit there and you...
Because spoiler alert, there have been fires. There have been property damage. Nobody's going to the white part of town and attacking white people. In the worst of these riots, nobody is going to the white part of town and burning out the white people. Okay? That's just not happening. You can say, well, isn't the government, the courthouse downtown, very white? And I'm like... well observed about how America works and who the justice system is for, but it's still not going to the rich part of town and burning down mansions, right? Yeah, somebody showed up outside Jeff Bezos's house with a guillotine, but, you know, that was a joke. No one's actually trying to, guillotine Jeff Bezos yet. Let's see how Jeff Bezos handles the rest of this plague before we decide how people start threatening him. But the point is, it's like no one is actually attacking the white part of town. The big thing was, well, two used car lots got burned down. And I'm like, okay, first off, that's kind of neat. I'm not in favor of terrorism in any way, shape, or form. I mean, property damage isn't terrorism, by the way. If you're not trying to kill people, it's not terrorism. But anyway, but I will say... I mean, just from a fan of Mad Max style fiction, seeing a bunch of burned out cars in the car lot, like, it was visually very satisfying. It's like I'm playing Fallout in real life.
It was such a dystopian picture. Yes, oh, it was. I know.
Yeah. It was very,
I know, except that the problem is it was real, and it was.
Oh, no, it was
again,
real.
It just still goes to your point that this is not. We are not living in the world of the Peasants' Rebellion in Germany.
No.
Where they went and they ripped apart churches and they ripped apart. They just did all in the name of poor Luther. Yes. Well, he started it. It was his, and then he wanted to stop it. And so what did he have to do?
But he had to go thing back in the bottle, and he went and he told everyone, no, you really should. Put the church should be in charge of everything.
He didn't do that.
No.
Because that's not how it worked. But what he did do, of course, was go to the princes and the kings and say, look, yeah, okay, you guys have to go put this down. But no, and then there was, then during the, the Crusades when they all decided to go down. I mean, but the peasants were just, you know, because the point was the poor people are just as good as the rich people. So they went and destroyed all sorts of things, right?
Well, no, until like then, God rich people, says, I mean, it's all right there in the Bible. God is not very fond of rich people. Like, there's no way to read around that part of the Bible that it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven. This is not subtle. There is no levels to this argument. If you are rich, you are not on the side of God. Like, it is red letter information. And if you're wondering, oh, hey, I don't know if you know, it's possible you don't know what the term red letter means and refers to. It's because in numerous kinds of Bibles, our audience, well, you know, obviously, our audience, you forget I'm talking to someone who's not just you sometimes, because I am talking to you. No, in numerous versions of the Bible, right? So the whole thing is printed in regular ink. But what they will do is when something is purported to be the actual literal words Jesus said, the word of God, they will print that in red. So all of Jesus's lines will be in red and the rest of the Bible will be in black. And that's how you know the red stuff is important.
Yeah.
And so that is what red letter refers to. When you say something is like a red letter statement, it's because this is coming from the highest possible authority. And so, like if you read the Bible, you're going to realize rich people are the problem. They're not the solution. And so they had to go out and make sure people weren't able to read the Bible. Like Sir Thomas More. I mean, Sir Thomas More is a wonderful character from history. Fascinating thing. Man for All Seasons is an amazing, was it a play first?
It was a play first, yes.
Yeah, play first. Great play, great movie. But, you know, it kind of glosses, and all of his stuff with Henry VIII is this amazing bit of history. But it does gloss over the fact that it's like, this is a man who had people tortured for owning a Bible. You know? Like, he was still in favor of the blind power of the aristocracy, right? Like, but he was like, there's one thing the aristocracy can't do, and that is have power over God, right? You can't change what the word of God is just because you want to, because you're a king, and that's why he got executed.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it, because that's when Henry VIII was breaking from the church in Rome. Now, he did not break from Roman Catholicism. What he did, though, was not want to, well, basically there was a financial end to it. He also wanted to divorce his wife, and the church wouldn't let him divorce his wife or create an annulment to that marriage.
Yeah.
And so he broke from the church, set up the Archbishop of Canterbury, and set up the Church of England. But it was still Roman Catholic.
Anglicans are still Roman Catholics.
Well,
really.
Not anymore.
No.
Okay. Because by the time you got to Elizabeth I, it was finally. And then, of course, you had you had Oliver Cromwell, and you had the Republic. And when they brought back the king, the king was just told, "We will never have a Roman Catholic monarchy again." Period. Yeah.
And that's why we have the Anglican Church, which is a lot like, which is a lot like the Catholics. They have a lot of the same costumes, a lot of the same ranks, almost all of the same, what do you call it? I'm looking for the word for rights, all of the same rights, but priests can get married there. That's one of the major differences.
Yes. Well, yeah, one of the major differences, because they actually do, if you are a high Anglican, they actually do have penance, so you can go and to confession. You don't have to go to confession, but you can go to confession. When you go to high Anglican services, they are very, very ritualistic. The closest you come to them is when you see when the kings of England and queens of England, or when they're at their funerals, at their
funerals, coronations and such.
Coronations, and usually at their weddings, which is what made Harry and Meghan's wedding so different. It was quite a bit.
Wasn't it great?
Yeah, that was, I did manage to watch that.
She had an American Baptist do the service.
The music was different than what was usually played.
A nice but black it is like,
but low
Anglicans. Preacher from the black church. Oh, yeah. That made me so happy when it happened. Yes.
and then low Anglicans. But the Queen didn't have a problem with it. This is, was all part of her Commonwealth anyway, one day.
Yeah, of course.
At one point, you know, I mean, but what happened too is that you have low Anglicans, right? And then you had Anglicans who broke off and became Methodists and Congregationalists and a whole bunch of other things.
Oh, yeah. But we're in this weird position where, and this is true, like the, like they essentially have in England a state church.
Yeah.
And the church, because the Queen is the head of government and the head of the church, it's this weird situation where like the government picks the bishops. And I mean, theoretically the Queen picks the bishops, but effectively the government will like, here's who the bishop should be, and then the Queen has to sign off on somebody becoming a bishop. Like, it's a very strange system they have there.
Well, yes, but the Queen, I mean, if there was some real, real problem, I am sure that the Queen might, although she wouldn't, I don't think she would step in.
I don't think she would step in.
Anymore. But she still is probably the only one that could. Nobody else could. And divorce, of course, and nobody who is a king or a queen technically could be, up until recently, could be divorced. And that was the big problem with Charles and Diana being separated, right? And then getting a divorce. It was a real problem. And that's why Camilla will never be queen.
Yeah. Well, and the question was, could Charles even be king now?
King, yeah.
Divorce? Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a real question, and they had to change. And that's when, you know, I mean, and they also changed that heredity just didn't matter whether you were male or female.
Yeah, firstborn gets to be the inheritance.
The firstborn male or female child. Gets.
Yeah. Married. And you can only have queens if there are no male children.
That's what it used to be. Not anymore.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. That's what the change was.
Yeah. Elizabeth's whole thing was that, like she became queen because, you know, her, she didn't have a little brother. So she was the oldest female. So boom, she got to be queen.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like back in the day, if she had had a 5-year-old brother when her father died, she still, like he would have, the 5-year-old brother would have been king.
Well, she would have probably been regent.
Exactly. Yeah.
Depending on how old she was, right?
Oh no, she was like what? 20 she was in her twenties, 21, 22, something like that. No, she would have been regent until the kid was 18 or 16 or whatever. Yeah. But you know, she wouldn't have gotten to be queen. And that's kind of a huge thing there.
Yeah, and but, so that's all changed. That
it's all completely changed. And thank God for it. You know, I mean, it's not an issue right now because all of the line from her through Charles, they're all male. Like, you know, like Charles had two sons. Well, two sons.
Well,
that's another, whether or not Charles actually had two sons is a whole other conversation.
Just stop. William is his child and William is king. William's firstborn was a son.
Didn't he have two sons? Oh, no, you're right. The second one was a daughter. Yes.
A daughter. So she would be like fourth in line or fifth in line. She's because Harry now is completely supplanted anyway.
Yeah. No, the minute William had kids, there's no chance Harry's ever going to be king.
No. And so, And so when those children have children, it's the firstborn will always. So, so that's all. You know,
But I was just glad when they changed that because it's like, even if Kate doesn't have a girl first, I'm glad that they changed it. So if she don't wait until Kate has a girl first to have this conversation, just, you know, do the right thing before it's
before. Before it happens.
Yeah. Do the right thing before you have to is the message. And for once the monarchy, the crown actually did it. And I was very happy to see it when they did.
Yes. And then Parliament just stamps that one. Oh, Parliament wants it. See, because Parliament, it's a very strange, in some ways, that relationship between the monarchy, which is basically a constitutional monarchy. Mm-hmm. But so the relationship between the Parliament and the monarchy itself is the Parliament really holds the power. Yeah. All the
power. That's interesting because technically a law can't become a law unless the Queen is willing to sign it. But practically, the Queen's not going to refuse to sign a law. And the Queen has to ask Parliament for permission to do pretty much anything.
Yeah. And I know, and it was a very interesting situation when we had it in Canada, when, the Harper government, the conservative, as you say, the crazy white ring conservative government that came in, prorogued parliament because it was going to fall.
Yes.
Okay. It was a minority and it was going to fall. And so they just prorogued it for about 3 months or something. But when they prorogued it, and then everybody was on going, well, will the governor general sign it? The governor general doesn't have to accept this. The governor general, and I'm going, no. She's going to accept that there's nothing. They're going, this is illegal. No, there's nothing illegal about it.
Yeah.
Now, people basically very seldom prorogued anything.
Especially for that long.
Yeah, for that long. And now, and so, of course, there might have been a little bit of fuss. But what are the conservatives going to say when Justin Trudeau prorogues it for 6 weeks, right?
Know, right?
Or
they're
2 months.
They're not in a position to debate that.
To debate that one, right? Because it was their guy that started the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. He's literally just following their precedent.
Yeah. It's a precedent. So, hey, you know, I'm going to take 2 months to figure out because, of course, what started actually the prorogation, I think, they must have been debating it, but not going to do it. And then Bill Morneau, our Minister of Finance, who was the most problematic character in the Wii scandal, resigned.
Yeah.
And then they must have figured that one out because this at the same time, like there was literally 24 hours of, well, I wonder who's going to replace him in Chrystia Freeland, who of course is the Prime Minister, second in command, whatever.
Deputy Prime Minister.
Deputy Prime Minister became the Minister of Finance.
Yeah.
Right away. And she is the one, of course, who led the negotiations over the new NAFTA treaty. And we're not going to talk about it, good or bad, right now, because that will take us forever. And as it is, we are avoiding talking about what's going on in America. And we're giving people all of this stuff. Because even today, there's some crap that happened and you're just sort of sitting there shaking your head in the States. But in Canada, right? So then Chrystia Freeland became the Minister of Finance. And then, of course, they said, well, okay, we're going to have to come up. We're going to extend the CERB benefit, the COVID benefit to the end of September. And then we'll come in with a budget in October. Yeah. And this will give Chrystia Freeland as the new Minister of Finance the time to sort of organize and the government to organize.
Well, let's face it. What you mean by organize is negotiate with the NDP so that they won't force an election. That's what you mean. It's not getting it organized. It's figuring out how can we make this comfortable for both us and the NDP.
And the NDP And of course, by then the Wii scandal will have faded into the past.
Well, that's the plan. I assume it will, but that is why they're doing it. They're like, we can't be negotiating the budget while people are talking about this idiotic scandal. And I understand their logic on that front. I think it's an idiotic scandal too, because you know it's not like anybody's making a ton of money off of this thing.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like as we talk about like every single thing that happens in the Trump administration is a con to make Trump or and his friends money.
Yeah. Right? So nobody's making any money off of this.
No, they just they just think that the people who are asked, the Wii company, oh my God,
the Wii organization,
which is a charity, they just feel they're too close to the liberals is what it really comes down to.
Yeah, is what it really boils down to. And yet it came into being during a conservative.
I know. I know. No, it did. Yeah, like it's done most of its work while conservatives were in power, and it's been a really good charity while conservatives were in power. But again, they'll take any.
I don't think that there's. So anyway, we're sitting here going.
Situation.
Yeah,
it really is. Please.
No, I was just going to say, but to get back to the more depressing news, I mean, I've talked myself about it being totally depressed about Canada now. So, but to get back to the really depressing stuff, and of course, QAnon has been, and their right-wing crap has been behind massive demonstrations in Germany and in England this weekend, and in Germany, in Berlin. In Berlin, the police just broke them up because there's a law that says you have to socially distance. They weren't socially distanced. So I don't know what's going on. But yeah, but I mean, this whole idiocy is worldwide. And I still, in my head, I still don't understand how people can follow this. The other good news, of course, is that Donald Trump has managed to go off his message. He stayed on his teleprompter, I've been told, throughout the entire convention.
Horrible 70-minute speech, and his speeches the other nights were all off teleprompter. He just sat there and he read, and he didn't say, and they convinced him not to start riffing and say crazy things.
Yeah.
And he didn't. Everything he said was stupid and a lie. But it was a stupid lie that is the official position of the Republican Party. It wasn't his just random riffing the way he loves to do.
Okay, because what happened was, because I just couldn't, I just can't listen to him anymore. I was just too depressed this week anyway. Like, and there were so many little crappy things that I have to take care of that I just said, I'm putting it off till next week because I just can't. I'm not going to sit down and talk to TELUS. I am not going to sit down and talk to Intact Insurance. I am not going to sit down, right? Because I don't want to do this, and I'll probably be really nasty, and I'll
absolutely,
or I'll get really angry or something, and it will be.
No, you can't let that mood bleed over.
You can't let it bleed over because it's not whoever I'm talking to. It's not their fault.
They're not the ones doing that. It's not their fault that you're feeling this way.
Yeah, and that these little pitsy things that I have to deal with are happening. It's the person you talk to is not the person in charge of making the bad decisions. Okay.
Oh, that's exactly right.
That's exactly how it works, right? Or getting your billing wrong.
Oh yeah.
You know, and my SIM card in my tablet doesn't work. Now it worked, and now it doesn't work. And I don't know why. And
you're going to have to deal with all of that next week.
You know, and that's ours. And I have to start work next week. Never mind. Guys, we've all got these little things that no matter, there's the big things and then there's all these little things. And then the big thing. And I'm just sitting here, and you just watch what's going on, the policing system in the States. And I watched some of these things.
Well, and that's the big thing that happened this week during the RNC, which is so shocking.
The
cops murdered. They attempted to murder. And it's like, I was like, he didn't get murdered. And people are like, yes, you're right. We just assumed he was going to have been murdered because he got shot seven times in his back. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that generally kills people. But miraculously, his lungs and his heart weren't particularly damaged, so he survived it. And say, frigging, I don't know who's working in the hospitals in Milwaukee, but Jesus Christ, those guys know what they're doing.
No kidding.
I saw this video and I heard what the injuries were, and I'm like, and they saved him? That's incredible.
Now, it looks like he's paralyzed from the waist down.
Yes, it does.
Okay, and so here's when I stopped. I haven't watched anything about American news except what I could get from the CBC, which is very tailored.
Of course.
It's just the high points. And I haven't even listened to the current talking about what's going on in the US because but when I listened and I did the one day listen to, and it, like before that, I was already pushing off it. And then on Thursday, so I guess it must have been Thursday, they talked to his father.
Right.
And his father had been finally allowed to go in and see him. And they had chained his legs.
Yeah.
They had handcuffed his legs to the bed. The man is paralyzed.
Yep.
Whose idiotic idea?
A cop in the room. I know. They chained him to the bed and there was a cop in the room.
And you're sitting there. Well,
he's paralyzed.
He's paralyzed from the waist down because a bunch of cops shot him seven times in the back.
Yep. I know.
So you're sitting there. And now, right, the intel chief says there will be no more briefings on election security in Congress.
Yeah. And
that's today's joy, right?
But I think the scariest part was, I'm not saying that all cops everywhere are unbelievably super racist. I am saying if you go on TV and watch it on the news, or you can just Google it, you can find a speech from 2 years ago where the chief of Kenosha police essentially says, we should jail black men for impregnating too many women because it causes there to be too many black children out there. Because he's like, there's people we have to jail forever and just lock them away to help society. But he's not talking about, like,
criminals.
Criminals. He's not talking about people who, you know, have, like, ridiculous amounts of convictions against them but keep getting out of jail. He's talking about people whose crime is increasing the black population too quickly. That's what he's talking about. And the best part is, he's like, who go out there and have kids with 10 different women, you have all these poor kids running around. I'm not saying it's a racial thing. You are saying it's a racial thing, though. Because I've never heard anyone say, we just have too many white children in America.
We have too many welfare white children in America.
It's not something I've ever heard an authority figure say.
It's just,
but when there are suddenly a lot of black people born in your state, suddenly you really start caring about, you know, the
birth
amount
control.
That people are, yeah, well, no, they don't care. They're still against,
nope.
The crazy part is, they're still against birth control and abortion.
That's right. That, yeah, so that's why they have to jail them,
jail
though,
the
because
men.
They're against birth control.
Exactly.
But jailing the men is a form of birth control.
Well, yes, obviously.
And
but
God,
I mean,
will,
like,
get them for that.
No,
there
mass
is
incar- oh, I know. But it's like, that should be, I'm not saying we should make that a t-shirt, but it's like, jailing black men is the only kind of birth control Republicans support.
Oh, that's a good one. I like
that's
that.
That's not bad. Okay. We might have t-shirts that say that soon.
Or you guys, or anybody who wants to make a t-shirt that says that.
Yeah.
Jailing blackmail, a form of Wisconsin birth control.
Yeah. Or, yeah, something
like
that.
Or Republican
birth control. We'll play with the wording.
That's it. Okay. Yeah. Republican birth control.
Jailing black men.
Yeah. The only form of birth control
Republicans approve of
jailing black men.
Yeah. it's true, though.
Long bumper sticker.
It's a really long bumper sticker, but it's 100% true.
Well, at least in Kenosha,
well,
Wisconsin,
according to this
it
one.
Is.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's just Kenosha, Wisconsin, where they believe that. Oh, God.
Oh, lordy, lordy.
It's funny, but it's like, but at the same time, right, Kenosha, Wisconsin, like,
it's too close to my home.
I know.
It's too close to my
home. Just across the river from where you live, so it's pretty scary.
It's a couple of hours.
Not just across the river, but still. A
couple of hours away.
Yeah, and I think what gets me, right, when I watch this stuff, is that it's like, I'm not for burning down businesses, but someone told me, someone asked me on Twitter, how can you be on the side of people who are burning down businesses? And I'm like, okay, insurance exists. People can just get a GoFundMe started so racists will turn their money over to the guy who runs the car dealership to own the libs. But I'm like, here's the thing. I'm on the side of the people who aren't murdering people. So if BLM just starts randomly murdering innocent people, I won't be on their side anymore. But I don't see that starting. If it does, I won't be on their side anymore, right? But by comparison, the right-wing side just likes to murder black people or people who support black people.
Don't even want to talk. I mean, that's the horror of Kenosha.
Well, yeah, it's the
that, like, white guy.
That child. And, I mean, people aren't making the connection too much, right? But I will say this, the one night, like, literally, these two idiotic rich white people get on TV and say, you know, if Joe Biden is elected, it's going to be up to you to defend your home from black radicals, right? And the next day, this idiotic 17-year-old gets an assault rifle and drives 2 hours so he can hunt black people.
In Kenosha.
It's called stochastic terrorism. It's a thing. You can look it up. Stochastic terrorism is when you want violence to happen, but you don't want to be responsible for it, so you don't tell people, go and attack this mosque. You just loudly complain about how Sharia law is taking over. Why won't someone do something about all this Sharia law? And you say that over and over again from a high pulpit until people start burning down mosques or shooting them up. that's what happens. That is the way in which Ben Shapiro is ethically responsible, not legally, ethically responsible for the guy who shot up the mosque in Montreal. Because the guy who watched, who shot up the mosque, just watched Ben Shapiro nonstop and thought that, you know, Muslims were going to kill him and everybody. So he shot up a mosque. Now, did Ben Shapiro tell him to shoot up a mosque? No, but he kept saying, these people are going to kill all of you. Why aren't people doing anything about it until somebody did something?
Yeah, well, that's right-wing radio in the U.S.
That's all of right-wing radio. That's, yeah. I mean, that's Rush Limbaugh getting people, Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly getting to people to murder George Tiller. It's the exact same thing. It's stochastic terrorism.
Well, and then we have, then let's go to something that we can talk about. I don't want to go too much because.
Okay. No. Yeah. We'll stop on that. It's too much.
It's depressing me. And then Fauci, when he's in the hospital having the polyp taken off, like off his throat.
Yeah.
Okay. That's when
the CDC changes its rules.
The CDC changes the rules based on what the presidential, whatever it is.
The White House, I mean, why are we?
And then they say Fauci.
The White House wants the numbers to come down.
Yeah,
so
and so Fauci.
Catholics.
Yeah, so yeah. Fauci is, and they said that Fauci approved this, and Fauci says I wasn't anywhere near it.
I was
under the knife.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was the beginning of my just this week and that sort of stuff. And
this is the part that, again, and we've talked about this a lot in these Sunday shows, and if you're tired of hearing us saying it, I really do apologize. But what it comes down to, on a certain level, is that these people, it's all marketing to them, right? These psychopaths who are running the American government, it's all marketing.
Yeah.
And the thing that keeps screwing them over is, no matter how much you market, no matter how much you goose the numbers, you can't change the fact that 1,000 people are dying every day.
And we have
all you can do is pretend it's not happening.
Yeah. And then we've got it. Okay. And to make it further, then we've got the Hurricane Laura.
Oh my God.
That was just disastrous. And then on a lighter note, given that last week we were talking about religion so much, we could say that here's the height of sexual hypocrisy and hypocrisy period.
How did we not talk about Jerry Falwell Jr. going down this week? Forgot about that. Thank you.
You gotta have something to laugh about, right? And apparently the former pool attendant is describing the relationship with the Falwells, and that wasn't the first one where that happened. And I'm going, and yeah, finally, he's going to get this huge settlement because
of course
he was supposed to be there for 10 years and he gets $1.5 million.
They'll give him a payoff to go away.
Oh, they did. Yeah. But the board, but he took back his resignation and then the board was going
to
meet, the board was meeting and that was it, you know,
because if he took back because if he resigned, he might not get the payout. He wanted him to have to fire him to get the payout. Cause again, Jerry Falwell Jr. cares only about two things on earth. One, being as rich as possible. Two, getting to see hot men have sex with his wife. Those are the only two things Jerry Falwell cares about.
Obviously, you know, I mean, now, mind you, and of course, Trump is going to forgive him.
Oh, of course.
I mean, this is something Trump would do. So what the hell, you know?
I think what you have to remember is it's the height of hypocrisy. And go and watch the video. If you want to see something fascinating, go and watch the video where Jerry Falwell Jr. endorses Donald Trump, right? And he is obviously sick to his stomach and sweaty and panicking and doesn't want to be there because, and this is true, the pool attendant was blackmailing them in some way.
Yeah.
And Jerry Falwell said, I need to get those pictures back. Michael Cohen, can you help me? And Michael Cohen said, I can negotiate this, but you have to endorse Donald Trump. That is the price for making the keeping the scandal from coming out. And by the way, this isn't conjecture. Michael Cohen has said this.
Yeah,
like
Michael Cohen. Now he said
Michael
he did
Cohen.
It separately from.
Oh yeah, from Donald. Well, no, he's back when he was, you know, doing it. He said he did it separately. I'm sure his book will say something very different when it comes out next month. But he's claimed that Donald Trump wasn't involved in that, but of course he was. Come on, you think Michael Cohen has money to pay off the pool boy? Michael Cohen's broke. No, he was handling the negotiation from the Falwells, and he was doing it for Donald Trump's at Donald Trump's behest. There's no, he never did anything that wasn't specifically ordered by and for Donald Trump. This isn't a man who went out and freelanced.
Yeah. You know? And it was so funny because if you watch that speech, it's not just looking at that. You listen to that speech and him talking about forgiveness, right?
I know.
And forgiving Donald Trump for his past, right? That's what Christianity is all about. And I was ready to throw up. I mean, there are a number of things that I did hear this week, and that's why I just couldn't, I couldn't even listen to John, what's his face. Now I did listen to, a bit of the march or the commemoration.
The speeches from the the commemoration.
Yeah, that's what I did.
It was fantastic this week.
Yeah, but that was on Canada and stuff too. Like you could watch.
Yeah, no, that was on the news everywhere.
You know, so, I mean, that was good to watch in some ways.
If you want to feel great about the world, go watch the speeches from the anniversary of the March on Washington. It was uplifting.
Well, it was uplifting, but I tell you, but deep down in my soul, I'm going, boy, I tell you, Martin Luther King, when he gave a speech, there are some people that can give speeches. I mean, it's his preacher's cadence.
Yep.
And he was, I mean.
The man, Martin Luther King Jr. had been preaching since he was what, 10?
Yeah.
So by the time he got to the March on Washington, he was more than two decades in to knowing how to work a crowd.
Yeah.
And he was, like, watch him. He's one of the best you've ever seen.
It is stunning. And yeah, and you can watch some of his speeches. There's lot of them on YouTube.
There are a lot of them on YouTube. Yeah.
So it's,
he was fantastic.
All right. It is interesting.
But yes, this is the week they took down Jerry Falwell went down for all of his public hypocrisy, and that felt great. It did.
Yeah,
I have no shame about my schadenfreude for that one.
Oh no, that is just like,
because this is a place where it's like he ran a school, quote unquote school. It's actually a scam real estate investment company, but that's another conversation for another time. Where like there was no interracial dating, you know. Where you couldn't, you couldn't kiss in public, no sex before marriage,
no adultery,
holding hands, blah, 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 blah. And this is what he was doing in his spare time. It's perfect.
I know. It's literally
perfect.
Yes. Yeah. As I always said about, there was of course Jimmy Swaggart. And of course his first double cousin, Jerry Lee Lewis.
Yes, I know, right?
Right. They were first double cousins, and they, you know, but the thing
in case
is
familiar
that
with the term double cousins means your cousins on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah.
And does that sound incestuous? Yes. Welcome to the American South.
Right. Anyway, they were first double cousins, and they used to hang out when they were kids. So Jimmy Swaggart becomes the preacher man. And Jerry Lee Lewis becomes the rock and roll, the devil, right? You've got the Satan, the devil, right? These two cousins.
And it turns out later on, they weren't actually as different as people
thought they were. Because there was all sorts of scandal about Jimmy Swaggart as well.
Yep. Fascinating.
Yeah, it is fascinating. But you see, Jerry Lee Lewis could, of course, wouldn't destroy his career.
No.
Jimmy Swaggart had to beg forgiveness and beg forgiveness. And anyway, I mean, that's all ancient history, but
it's not that ancient. I mean, these things keep happening over and over again in the American evangelical community.
Well, what I sit there and I just go, you know, I mean, you just have to know your history. I'm trying to explain to someone. I said, if you really want to know whether some people believe in somehow or another, how can they hold this cognitive dissonance? I was trying to explain that yesterday. It's so hard to explain to people, particularly when you're in your head going, okay, yeah, well, I know that you're holding cognitive dissonance in place, in fact, yourself. And so why can't you understand when other people do it? But anyway, they don't, you know, but this is this kind of thing that goes on. Go read Elmer Gentry.
Yeah. That's
all
you need to know.
Read the books, Sinclair Lewis, And that will be my movie suggestion.
Please, yes,
go and watch Elmer Gantry.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And it's basically the story of Amy Semple McPherson plus the con. And then the other thing is that horror.
Briefly tell people who Amy Semple McPherson is, because they're not going to have heard of her.
Oh, no, if they've been watching Perry Mason.
Oh, you're right. You're right. She's a fan. You're right. That's who. That's who our beloved, our beloved Tatiana Maslany is playing, a fake version of Amy Semple McPherson.
Yeah.
You're right. I assume nobody knows who she is, but of course, she's more famous now than she's been in 50 years.
But I will because tell of Perry you, Mason. It's funny. I listened to an interview with Tatiana on our Q, like our big famous Q. That
Q is the giant interview show here in Canada.
Yeah, but Americans listen to it because it became famous when
Billy Bob Thornton debacle. Yeah.
Well, that made Gian Gomeshi, and now Tom Power is it continued on, right? And they can get almost anybody
Power, they can get anybody. He does a great job, and he's not an accused rapist, so thumbs up.
Yeah, so Tatiana, and she was going, you know, I didn't even know anything about Amy Semple McPherson. So she had to read up about her, right? And I'm just going, yeah, but that's it. Nobody knows anything about this kind of history. Yeah. So I say that one of the ways, right? Now, you know, I mean, Elmer Gantry is a tour de force performance by Burt Lancaster.
Yep.
Shelley Winters is in it. And who the hell, Gene, who plays? It's funny. Who plays Amy Semple? The preacher.
That's a good question.
Isn't that funny? I can't remember right now. I haven't seen it in ages.
Years and years and years.
Yeah, but the other thing that people then should watch is the and it has nothing to do with that. You know, where you have good and evil on the fist.
Yes, Night of the Hunter.
They are both based on books. So if you prefer to read, go read Elmer Gantry. Night of the Hunter. But Night of the Hunter is this creepy movie.
Unbelievably creepy. Oh. Maybe Robert Mitchum's best performance.
It's probably Robert.
I don't know why I'm saying maybe. It's his best performance.
And then Shelley Winters plays
a preacher. Oh yeah, Shelley Winters is incredible in that movie. Yeah. But he plays a preacher who's a murderer, and I'm not going to say anything else.
Yes.
And he is, you know that old statement about it's like nobody can say scripture better than the devil, which should give you some hint about how easy it is, like. It's true that because you shouldn't trust people who just spout scripture as a general rule, but it's also true about how easy it is to make the word of God, take the word of God and use it for whatever purpose you want.
Yeah. And that's right. Yeah. And then the end, Lillian Gish is actually in it at the end.
Yep.
So,
but yes, he is the perfect example of that idea of the exploitation that men of God get to do because of the deference given to them, especially in the American rural South.
Yeah.
As like, you can get away with anything if you're a man of God down there. And we're not going to spoil what he does, but Jesus, it's an amazing movie.
Yes. And we've already told people to watch the one with
Face in the Crowd, obviously.
Face in the Crowd, which is more the political one. But also the Brad Dourif one.
Oh yeah, Wise Blood. No, Wise Blood is again
fits in with amazing. Elmer Gantry and
because it's a story entirely about how someone falls to cynicism from faith. It's like how faith is abused and how faith is manipulated and what happens when true believers fall to cynicism. It's an amazing movie and another amazing book.
Yeah.
My suggestion is going to be a little different because I just, I watched it last night because I found this out. I had been putting off watching it forever. It's not a major film. It's not a hard to watch film. It's just a really good movie. I just had never gotten around to watching it. And then I found out last night that Chadwick Boseman had died.
It's
the perfect time to do it.
Yeah.
And he was fantastic. And I mean, the bravery of this guy for having colon cancer the entire time that he was becoming super famous, and not making it part of the story, not doing narratives, not trying to make his illness the narrative ever.
Yep.
Whereas so many people, you know, would be willing to do that for its Q value, but just like, nope, I'm fighting it on my own time, and here's the public version of myself for the fans. Yeah. And wow, I already loved his work, but now I just respect him so much more. So I'm going to recommend people watch 21 Bridges, which is this wonderful police thriller he made. It is the story of a guy. He plays a very interesting character, where his father was killed by criminals when he was a child, and was a cop, and he decided, I'm going to become a cop. And he becomes a cop solely because he wants to murder criminals. And the only legal way to do that is to become a police officer. And he becomes known within the NYPD as the guy who, if anything bad happens to a cop, and you want to make sure that the guy who did it doesn't go to trial, you put this character on the case, and one way or another, he's going to contrive a situation where that guy gets killed, just the way Raylan Givens does on Justified.
Yeah. But or Luther.
Luther does the exact same thing. And it is a story that kicks off with two, you know, just criminals going to rob a drug depot. But the problem is, it's a drug depot that is serviced by police officers. They're the ones who move drugs from place to place. So within 10 minutes, 8 cops get killed. And then the rest of the film plays out in the 4 hours after that happened of trying to track those guys down, the killers. And at the same time, what is going to happen to this guy? His entire life has been, you know, devoted to murdering criminals who hurt cops, when he realizes that the cops are the problem.
Yeah.
And it's a great, it's an action thriller. There's not a ton of character moments, but he still does an amazing job as the character. Like, as the character, he does a really stellar job, and he has a lot of great moments, and it's a pleasure to watch. So the movie is called 21 Bridges. In Canada, you can watch it on Prime. I don't know where it is in America, but it is just a great thriller, and it just showcases what a versatile performer he was. So Chadwick Boseman, gone too soon. We're going to miss you, and everybody be sure to catch up on the wonderful movies he made. Even his Jackie Robinson movie is very good.
Yeah, and what I would say is that one of the things that you should actually go and listen to, and I assume it's on YouTube. Actually, I'll click here. It's on YouTube, is his commencement speech. Actually, you can see probably on CNN. You can see it on CNN. His commencement speech at Howard University in 2018.
Of course it was Howard University. Why would I even ask?
Well, he's an alumni, right?
Yeah. No, I knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he gives the commencement speech, and it's
great.
And you can listen to it on CNN. It was one of the high points of a horrible week last week, was watching him
do that speech.
Right. Yeah. And that's only 2 years ago.
All right. So, that is that. Thank you for coming on this journey with us. We hope it made it a little easier. And more importantly, we hope you learned a lot about how the Canadian government, it's really fascinating, and it's completely different from what America does, Germany does, pretty similar to what England does, but not completely similar. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you'd like to tell us how you're getting through all of this madness of 2020, please drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. There's no second Tuesday episode going on right now. We hoped you liked all of Gone. Maybe you watched it with us. Who can say? But if you were going to be joining us on Thursday, we're continuing our trip through season 10, the Jennifer Love Hewitt season. So I hope you're liking that. Although I don't know how you can.
Poor Jennifer Love Hewitt.
No, poor Jennifer Love Hewitt.
As I said, no wonder she got pregnant.
Decided to get pregnant again. I know. It's like, why'd you, I just imagine her years later having like a second kid. And it's like, so why'd you have another kid right away? Well, I wanted to break my contract with the TV show. But anyway.
That's our speculation, but my
report. No, we have no proof. Obviously, we have no proof. Because JJ went and had another kid, and she didn't quit the show.
Well, so yes, kind of suggests, but who's to know whether or not she wanted out?
No, I know. That's another conversation.
I'm saying, right? All
I'm saying is having a kid doesn't mean you have to quit a show.
No.
JJ had two kids while she was making the show, and she always came back. Even after they fired her, she still came back. Respect, by the way. You go, AJ Cook. All right, so we'll see you back for that on Thursday. And then, of course, back here next Sunday for hopefully a recap of a better week. Well, you know what? It's a week in which you can watch the new Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure movie. So it's got to be a little better than this past week was. Spoiler alert, that's going to be my recommendation next week. So we'll see you back here for that. But until then, au revoir.
And have a good week.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.